China in particular has been reluctant to kind of look like it's acting directly in concert with Russia, and this is really a step towards making it clear that they are acting together.
A strategic alliance at the Beijing Olympics. It's Monday, February 7th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, New Zealand's COVID plan, the Olympics amid COVID, a special U.S. athlete in China, fashion sustainability, the Olympics from space. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The White House has dismissed a meeting between Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin, where the two leaders unveiled a strategic alliance aimed at countering the United States. Chief White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara tells us more.
The Beijing Winter Olympics started with a geopolitical bang. Just hours before the Games' opening on Friday, Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin met to unveil a strategic alliance, shown in this video from CCTV.
China and Russia are adhering to their original aspirations and have always maintained steady progress in bilateral relations.
Regarding the relations between our two countries, they are developing really gradually, in the spirit of friendship and strategic partnership.
The move is designed to balance what they portrayed as malign American global influence. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki downplayed the meeting.
What we have control over is our own relationships and the projection of our own values, and also looking for ways to work with countries even where we disagree.
China joined Russia's call to halt NATO's expansion, Moscow's point of contention with the West that Russia claims has caused it to amass troops on its border with Ukraine. Meanwhile, Moscow voiced its support for Beijing's stance that Taiwan is an inalienable part of China. Analysts say the Putin-Xi alliance is designed to counter Washington's narrative that Moscow and Beijing are acting aggressively on Ukraine and Taiwan by claiming that it is the United States that is interfering in their spheres of influence.
They're portraying themselves in many ways as standing up to a revisionist and aggressive United States. So to that, it's actually fairly remarkable. There have been moments in the past where China in particular has been reluctant to kind of look like it's acting directly in concert with Russia. And this is really a step towards making it clear that they are acting together.
Moscow and Beijing also voiced opposition to the AUKUS alliance between Australia, Britain, and the United States, saying it increased the danger of an arms race in the region. Meanwhile, Russia has conducted military exercises with Belarus as part of what analysts say is an effort to intimidate Ukraine by surrounding the country, heightening further fears of invasion. To show support to NATO allies, Biden is sending 2,000 U.S.-based troops to Poland and Germany and shifting 1,000 soldiers from Germany to Romania. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News, Washington.
You'll find much more on this story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. See us on Facebook and at voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. United Nations stalls on new North Korea sanctions amid growing nuclear fears. Macau measures seen as attempt to head off Hong Kong-like crisis. New Zealand Prime Minister calls for united battle against COVID. Olympic teams raise concerns over quarantine hotels. Lata Mangeshkar, Nightingale of India, dies at 92. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more by visiting us online at Facebook and VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. New Zealand has announced a five-stage reopening of its international borders, which have been closed to most foreign travelers since March 2020 because of COVID-19. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New Zealand's phased approach to reopening its international borders will begin on February 27. fully vaccinated citizens and other visa holders travelling from Australia will be allowed into New Zealand without spending 2 weeks in a state-managed isolation and quarantine facility known as MIQ. All arrivals must, however, self-isolate at home for 10 days. Border rules for New Zealanders in other countries, as well as international students and migrant workers, will gradually be relaxed in the coming months. New Zealand's borders have been closed for almost 2 years. Most foreign travellers have been banned, apart from a brief travel bubble with Australia last year. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern on Thursday stressed the importance of reconnecting families and friends, as well as boosting the economy. She said the new border rules were part of a journey back to a new normal.
I know while many will celebrate today's reopening, others will feel anxious about the resumption of people across our border. But here are the safeguards. We will be as boosted as possible at the end of February. The phasing reduces the risk of a surge in cases, and travellers will be testing and isolating, with MIQ remaining for the unvaccinated. This means we will know quickly if a traveller has the virus, including any new variants.
Business groups, however, have said the new rules won't help New Zealand's ailing tourism sector, which has been hit hard by pandemic border closures. Some travel companies believe there's little appetite among international visitors to go to New Zealand if they have to isolate for 10 days. The government has said the quarantine regulations will be reviewed. New Zealand, a South Pacific nation with a population of about 5 million, has imposed some of the world's toughest coronavirus border measures. Prime Minister Ardern has acknowledged the heartbreak they've caused to families, but she's insisted they have saved lives. New Zealand has recorded about 17,000 COVID-19 cases since the start of the pandemic. 53 people have died, according to official data. About 94% of the eligible population has received 2 doses of a COVID-19 vaccine. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, holding the Olympics amid COVID. Happening now in Asia, Chinese President Xi Jinping Sunday held wide-ranging bilateral talks with visiting Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan, in which they stressed the urgency of providing enhanced international aid to Afghanistan to help it avert a looming humanitarian crisis. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Top athletes from around the world are pursuing their dreams and competing at the Winter Olympics, which began February 4th. But this year is not like any other, as athletes are coached on specific pandemic protocols they must follow. For some, it creates uncertainty. For others, a sense of relief. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti spoke with 3 U.S. Olympians before they left for Beijing.
This is what Olympian Chris Masder sees on his luge.
We basically go on these Formula One race sleds, 90 miles an hour, down a sheet of ice.
In skeleton world championships.
This is Olympian Katie Uhlander in a skeleton race.
Basically like jumping on top of a cookie sheet and using your body to go as fast as possible.
This is Olympian Kevin Bickner on a ski jump.
So at the top of the hill, I'm really just thinking about the things that my coaches told me moments before.
3 U.S. athletes pursuing gold in Beijing during the coronavirus pandemic that, like them, refuses to quit.
So you have to make sure you're getting the right test. So, yeah, it's definitely a logistical headache at times.
To avoid losing focus, the U.S. luge team hired a COVID liaison to keep track of vaccinations, tests, and masks, all mandatory. A year ago, Olympic organizers in China held a testing event to show the athletes what they will face when they land in Beijing for the real competition.
They tested every day. Every person that we interacted with essentially was wearing a hazmat suit unless they did a 3-week quarantine to be able to interact with us. And we're still wearing masks.
Ahead of the games, athletes dealt with closed gyms and income losses from canceled tournaments. Ulander, who only had audio available when we spoke to her while traveling to Beijing, says she took a job as an assistant arborist to stay fit.
So I'd pull trees over, and then when he would cut them down, I'd move all the logs. And it was a great substitute for the weight room and just general fitness. And plus, I got to be out in the woods, which is one of my favorite places to be.
Bickner says he looks forward to landing in Beijing. And once inside the Olympic bubble, seeing no one except the other COVID-tested athletes.
I don't think anyone is going to be spreading COVID around the village. And so I'm not going to be too worried about it once I'm there. It'll be definitely a bit of relief.
Much like last year's Summer Games in Tokyo, no spectators will be allowed in the stands in Beijing. That means Master's wife and 9-month-old stay home. Ulander's family can't cheer her to a women's record as she competes in her 5th Winter Olympics. And Bickner's parents won't see him in his 2nd Olympics. Even so, these athletes are keeping their eyes on one thing.
Going for the gold.
Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the place to find out more on this story and all the stories you hear on today's program. At the Beijing Olympics, Norway tops the medals table heading into Monday's competition. The Norwegians have 2 gold and 1 bronze, followed by Sweden with 2 golds. Russian athletes competing at the Games have collected the most overall so far with 5 medals, including 1 gold, 2 silver, and 2 bronze. Host China is currently 9th with 1 gold, followed by the United States with 2 silver. Meanwhile, China will increase the supply of merchandise featuring Bing Duanduan, the panda mascot of the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics. The organizing committee's announcement Sunday came as Chinese media and internet users reported difficulty in buying souvenirs in the likeness of the chubby panda in a hard, transparent bodysuit. Many had lined up for hours in cold weather outside a flagship souvenir store in Beijing, but failed to get the soft toys and other decorations commemorating the Games. Be sure to follow all the latest on the Olympics at our homepage at voanews.com.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Direct international flights to the Indonesian resort island of Bali have resumed for the first time in 2 years. However, mandatory COVID quarantine rules remain in place for all visitors. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Much more is to come on VOA Asia. Right now, born in China and adopted by American parents, 17-year-old mogul skier Kai Owens is returning to Beijing to compete for Team USA at the 2022 Winter Olympics. That's where she hopes to win a gold medal in freestyle skiing. VOA's Adriana Zhang introduces us to the China-born Olympic skiing phenom.
Orphaned shortly after she was born in China's Anhui province, American mogul skier Kai Owens was adopted by a couple from Colorado when she was 16 months old.
I'm extremely lucky to be adopted by my parents that I have now and that they loved skiing. You know, like, who knows if I wasn't adopted, what I'd be. I probably would never have made it to the U.S. I would probably be kind of just hopefully a normal Chinese citizen. Or if I was adopted by anyone other than my parents, then I could have a whole different life. So that's crazy.
Growing up in Vail, Colorado, Owens developed talent for skiing from an early age. The 17-year-old is now ranked number 9 in the World Cup Moguls ranking by the International Ski Federation.
I just love mobile skiing and I love the training and I enjoy the process of kind of becoming a professional athlete, and I enjoy kind of my career. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And yeah, I'd say work ethic. I like to work hard and get better every day.
Her parents are her biggest supporters.
They have just supported my passions. Competitive mobile skiing has always been self-driven. I'm a competitive person, and I love competing in mobiles. So they've always just supported me.
Her inclusion in Team USA draws parallels to skier Eileen Gu. Born in California to an American father and Chinese mother, Gu has decided to compete for China because of her heritage. Owens made a different decision.
I'm very proud to represent the United States because I was raised here and I consider this my home. So I think being able to compete for the Olympics is just such an incredible accomplishment. And so I think if you're proud of the country you're representing, then that's all that matters.
Adriana Zhang, VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, new U.S. ambassador to Tokyo, Rahm Emanuel, pledged to Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida he would work every day on behalf of the ideals of the U.S.-Japan alliance. And he presented the Prime Minister with personalized baseball jerseys from the Chicago White Sox and Chicago Cubs. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the fashion industry has always had a relationship with some forms of social activism. But all too often, the industry is also seen as one of excess and consumerism gone wild. That could change if New York's Fashion Sustainability and Social Accountability Act, or FSSAA, becomes law. Nina Vishneva has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
This is the oven mitt jacket. This one was on display at a museum for a while, so it just came back.
She's so good at giving things a second and third life. It's no wonder Nicole McLaughlin has been nicknamed the upcycling sorceress.
This is all out of shoes, used shoes from a thrift store. It's very like hard and kind of tactical, almost like an armor.
McLaughlin joined the fashion of sustainability bandwagon after working as a graphic designer at a large shoe corporation. She saw how much got thrown away. Huge amounts of fabric, buttons and zippers. Thousands upon thousands of trial models. So McLaughlin started to save whatever she could and transformed the salvaged pieces. Soon she was so captivated by the process, she decided to fully dedicate herself to sustainable fashion.
Sustainable fashion always was kind of like, you know, on the back burner, and it was very small, and now it's kind of like, you know, if you aren't really putting your money where your mouth is and investing in the future, these brands aren't going to be able to sustain.
They may be forced into sustainability if New York's Fashion Sustainability and Social Accountability Act becomes law. Introduced into the state legislature earlier this year, the measure would require fashion retailers and manufacturers to be accountable for their sustainability practices. They would need to make information about shipping, materials used, and employees' labor conditions transparent and public, no matter where production takes place. The Fashion Act will apply to large brands with sales of more than $100 million that do business in the state of New York. Violators could be fined up to 2% of their annual income, and the list of violators will be published by the New York Attorney General's office. Many designers support the initiative, Stella McCartney among them. Audrey Robinson is the sales supervisor at the Stella McCartney Soho Boutique. She's proud to show the boutique's new sustainable collection.
It's been a miracle, to tell you the truth, to actually be able to have a skin-free skin made out of a vegetable.
out of a fungus, a vegetable, something from the earth, something natural. It's important.
The United Nations Environment Programme says the fashion industry is responsible for 10% of the world's carbon emissions. And not only that, but according to the Secondary Materials and Recycled Textiles Association, or SMART, almost all secondhand clothing and textiles can be recycled and reused, yet 80% end up in landfills. McLaughlin says that has to stop.
It's really important to be able to think about your childhood and your past and kind of use that as reference, but there's a lot of trash, and I think this is something that I would consider trash to treasure.
Treasure and a gift to efforts to slow climate change. What is still unclear is what effect the sustainability law will have on the price of clothing if it is enacted. For Nina Vishnova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Back in 2011, astronomers found a mysterious object at the center of the Milky Way. After the scientists studied the object at different wavelengths, they determined that it had to be a cloud of dust and gas, which they named G2. But they were surprised that the nearby supermassive black hole, Sagittarius A star, didn't rip it to shreds. Now, 10 years later, a research team led by scientists from the University of Cologne's Institute of Astrophysics has found that G2 is not a gas and dust cloud, but are three young stars. The researchers calculated that the stars began to form only a million years ago, which in astronomical terms is quite young. The team used the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope in Chile to observe the tiny nursery. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
NASA says global temperatures are on the rise, and that could spell trouble for future Winter Olympics games. Plus, Australian astronomers have discovered an unidentified space object, and a pair of satellites touched the sky. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us a Winter Olympics edition of News from Space.
The Winter Olympic Games, and for athletes like the U.S. snowboard team's Taylor Gold, they are a reminder that our planet is changing.
It makes me sad that we need so much man-made snow to sustain winter sports.
Gold competed in the Sochi Winter Olympics in 2014, and the 8 years since then have been the hottest on record. This according to recent and separate reports from NASA and NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
The biggest threat facing these cold, mountainous regions is basically a warming climate.
Tessa Gart is a PhD candidate at the University of Colorado Boulder. She's been tracking previous cities that hosted the Winter Games.
A lot of them are getting really, really warm, not just really warm, but really warm really quickly. And that has, you know, massive ramifications, obviously, for the Olympic Games, as well as things like local economy, local climate, local weather.
Experts say too many carbon emissions trapped in our atmosphere mean that by 2050, only 10 of the last 19 Winter Olympic venues could host the games if warming trends continue. Meanwhile, Chinese state television released this video, and VOA cannot independently verify its content, but it claims to show Chinese astronaut Wang Yaping aboard the Tiangong space station hosting part chemistry experiment and part art exhibit. China's government says she mixed chemical solutions in space to create the iconic Olympic rings.
Go Falcon, go, go.
Also, private spaceflight company SpaceX launched a pair of satellites. One launch carried a U.S. spy satellite, the video of which aired via webcast until the classified part of the mission cut that short.
And liftoff!
The other launch carried an Italian satellite that had been delayed three times by weather and once when a cruise ship encroached on the launch pad. Finally, Australian astronomers discovered a bright, pulsating object in our Milky Way galaxy roughly 4,000 light-years from Earth. They found that in 2018, the object emitted powerful pulses of energy every 18 minutes. The astronomers haven't said what it is, but they ruled out alien life forms. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. Be sure to come back again tomorrow. In the meantime, join us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Casquejo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.